Drabblecast Director's Cut, The Shallow One, by Matthew Sanborn Smith. Drabblecast Director's Cuts are special feature episodes, where in part one, we play a previous Drabblecast story uncut, and in part two, I sit down with the author and shoot the shit whilst listening to the story, giving you insights into its writing, its production, and the nature of the universe as we know it. Enjoy. The Shallow One, by Matthew Sanborn Smith. 1. Pod People. I first met Madeline at the local drugstore, IBS, in the digestive aids aisle. We were both buying constipation products when our hands touched. Electricity passed between us, though it may have just been the carpeting. My drone quivered on my shoulder, begging permission to snap a pic. Sorry, I said. Be my guest, giving her the right of way to a Cenapod laxative brand called Full Bore. It's not urgent. I'm just trying to ease back on my attachment to my body, working on projecting my mind beyond the confines of this damnable skull. That sort of thing. I wrapped my knuckles on the side of my head, emphasizing its damnability. Oh, sure, yeah, I totally get that, she said. Me, I kinda overdid it on the fondue the other night. 6 of 1, 6 of 1, 6 of the other. I don't really think our reasons are equivalent. No, I meant that's how much fondue I had. As she spoke, I pictured the shot in my head. Her face framed by curls dark as the abyss. The purple billows of adult diaper packages off her right shoulder. The bright green cylinders of glycerin suppositories by her left. My followers were going to go mad for her. Okay, what's this thing about? She pointed to the spherical red copter perched on my shoulder. Oh, that's my drone. I post my whole life online. It does photos, videos, and whatnot. I call it Drone Loke. Her blank expression reminded me, since no one got the reference anyway, I could have gone with my first instinct and named it Drona Barrett. Speaking of that, I said, would you mind if I took a photo of you for my Winstagram? It's a new app where people share too much information. Okay, but only if you make me a star. Hold on, I gotta show off my bloat belly. She dropped her sweatpants waistband a couple inches and lifted her shirt a bit before posing with the bottle of Full Bore like a game show presenter. None of this was helping me detach from my body. I showed her my phone with Drone Loke's pic of her before I posted it. She grabbed the phone and added, hashtag, she really softens my stool. Damn, someone in real life finally understood me. I think I'm in love, I said. Yeah, you are. She spun and walked backwards slowly as she spoke, drawing me deeper into the antifungal aisle. It was an omen I couldn't read at the time. I'm Jad, by the way. Nice to meet you. I'm Madeline. Hey, Jaddy and Maddie. No, Madeline and Jad. Yeah, or we could do that. You want to go for lunch? I mean, like the day after tomorrow or something? After the storm? She asked, shaking the Cenapod bottle. Yeah, I know a great vegan place, high in fiber. Sure, she said. Really? No one outside of the internet has ever said sure to me. Virtual hugs outnumbered the real ones several thousand to 1. Why not? Madeline said. I mean, we're probably all going to be eaten by those aliens soon, living and laughing till we're dying and crying, right? If I didn't think I'd eat it myself, I'd carry some of that fondue with me all the time. Clog those bastards up good. 2. The Kenner Out of Space. So, that bit about projecting my mind beyond the confines of my skull? That was no joke. I was hard at work leaving my body behind, uploading myself to the whole wide world thought by thought, largely by way of social media. Somewhere in the wilds of Indiana, my tiny server farm, well, more of a server victory garden, really was collecting my posts and my comments, my photos and videos, and feeding them to a neural network which was trying to become me as quickly as possible. And those aliens Madeline worried about were a key part of my plan. See, I have an in with them, having interviewed a couple of the aliens a few weeks back. They sought me out, thank you very much. I'm kind of a thing, I guess you could say. And that cross-species conversation only pushed my numbers higher, snagging me some TV time and lifting me from 6 digits to 7. I earned every one of those eyeballs and ear balls by not running from them or screaming till my throat exploded. I mean, picture the unholy spawn of a lobster and a wasp and a head fuzzy with so many antennae it could see in radio. I know, because they told me I looked like Bruno Mars. And the stench, no wonder they spent so much time in the empty void between worlds. In space, no one can smell you stink. They called themselves the Wego, stressing they were a lot more chill than their cousin race, the Migo, whoever they were. You got these Migo over here. They're selfish and they're all about their secrets, they told me. Or at least one of them did, whom I named Shelly. The other one quietly stayed back a step to Shelly's left, like a hype man who was about to get fired. They'd settled into an 18th-story penthouse, making it their own. Beds of soil had replaced the original beds of mattress. Shelves of books lined the walls, all written in Arabic, which seemed strange. And there were crystals mounted everywhere. Shelley continued, animating her pinchers like puppets. You're always gonna find Migo whispering in the darkness, but us? If we got something to say to you, we'll come right out and say it to your face, in broad daylight, and even then we'll probably just tell you that you're a pretty good guy. Another major difference is our support of unions.
Servitors of the Outer Gods Local 619, y'all!
Shouted the suddenly excited hype man. They loved my names for them, and loved our concept of naming ourselves even more. For millennia, they lived the struggle of, hey, you, no, not you, that one, no, you over there. And they felt like they owed me big time for the name thing, and I already knew what I was going to ask them for in exchange. That's what I'm talking about, continued Shelley. We support activism at the mycelium level. Think galactically, act globally. About the only things we share with the Migo are our love for travel, reading, and canning.
Can it up,
shouted the hype man. Hell yeah! If the Migo were worse, I wanted no part of them. I had made enough trouble overcoming my revulsion to talking fungi with pink exoskeletons, no matter how sincere they seemed. There's a screenshot from my interview making the rounds online, from a rare moment when Shelley's wings were at half-mast and you could get a decent look at the bookshelf behind her. It was only after the interview went live that I learned each of us saw the book titles in our first language. So the Wego didn't write in Arabic, and were not as interesting as I thought. Faced out on that shelf sat a treatise on the delight of eating candy wafers called the Necronomicon. But that wasn't the most controversial book there, even if those things are like eating chalk. To the left of it, one of the spines clearly reads, To Preserve Man. Now, does that mean the Wego are trying to save us from our own destruction, or are they trying to save us for some Sunday dinner next winter? And what about women? Some people claimed it wasn't so bad because a canning book wasn't technically a cookbook, but cooking was involved, making it equally as uncomfortable for the human participants. I didn't really think the aliens were going to eat us, but if I had to convince Madeline of that, she wouldn't be having lunch with me the day after tomorrow. 3. Cool Pear. Look, I'm not just another pretty face at the opposite end of a spastic colon, Madeline said, tearing into her vegan steak. I own an ice cream parlor. Maybe you've heard of it? The Ice Cream Request of Unknown Kadath? Whoops, am I allowed to talk about this in here? Yeah, I think you are, even though no one uses the word parlor anymore. I took a bite of my vegan pork chops. The best thing about them was you could eat the bones. Lunchtime for Madeline was 10 a.m. Lucky for us, the ancient hippies who ran this place were up at 4 and ready to veg. This was still the middle of the night to me, and I was not at my best. But Madeline apparently had ice cream in desperate need of a good scooping right after we were done here. I still use the word parlor, she said. And I have a master's in creameryism. Anyways, outside of that, when I'm not at my shop or sitting on my toilet, I like to run 5 M's.
5 M's?
Yeah, I don't have time for 5 K's. I'm running a business. Hey, isn't this supposed to come with a side of carrots or something? Not here, I'm afraid. Any vegetables have to be in fake meat form, hence the name. I pointed to the green and orange counter behind me. The logo on the front read, The Chive Turkey. I toasted her with a warm glass of vegan venison juice to prove my point. But not before Drone Loc took pics, of course. "Are you ever not online?" she asked. "God, I hope not," I said, posting a poll on whether I should finish up the meal with the chocolate-frosted faux tuna or the candied fake squirrel tails. "I understand you've got a business to run, but a little bit of privacy is good sometimes too, don't you think?" "Oh, no. I'm on the verge of transcending my physical form here. Private thoughts will not do." "But you can't really transcend anything. At best, you're making an outside simulation that thinks it's you. You're still going to be stuck in there," she said, pointing at my head. I nodded while trying to nonchalantly eject a bit of vegetable gristle into my napkin. I didn't want to know why that wasn't edible. "That's an obstacle, sure. Like Star Trek transporters. Ensign Madeline gets disintegrated on the ship, then a duplicate Ensign Madeline is constructed on the planet below. As far as the Madeline on the planet is concerned, she is her, and has always been. But when you transfer to your neural net, you're not disintegrating yourself." Madeline froze with her fork hanging from her mouth. "You're not disintegrating yourself, are you?" "Not exactly. The Mego can put a human brain in a jar and keep it alive, and the Wego say their tech is even better." "You are serious. Are you serious? Because you're freaking me out right now." "No, it's fine. Listen, I'm asking them to put my hippocampus in a jar. That's where the memories happen. No more memories, no more me. If my new self ever changed its mind, they could always smush my brain back together, I assume." I could see Madeline trying to make the word start up in her face for a few seconds, but not quite getting there. Then she said, "I think I'm gonna go now." I couldn't argue. I went to my default mode, which meant plugging myself when I really wanted to burst into tears and shout, "Oh God, don't leave me! Hey, I'm sorry you have to go, but you should check out my new Licklock channel, at SadBadJad. It's where people post videos of themselves dancing while their tongues are stuck to frozen metal. I swear it's a lot of fun." Like I said, I was not at my best. Madeline's response was the door closing behind her. Still, it was the best date I'd had all year. 4. With a name like Suckers. Within a few weeks, NeuralNet Jad was posting up a storm and getting better shots with Drone Loc than I could ever. Sure, the new selfies were kind of weird. A computer server wearing a Noah's Arkham baseball cap, a computer server with a ginormous bean burrito, that sort of thing. But my numbers were going up, up, up. That only proved the human me was useless. Time to check out. Shelley insisted the procedure didn't require an anesthetic.
"Totally painless, brother,"
Hype Man shouted. Well, they were the advanced race. Still, I had to question their methods when they had me climb into a portable glass chamber in their hotel suite. "Relax, sweet lobes. This is just a step one," Shelley said.
"Okay.
Here, something to read during the procedure. Hope you like horror." The title was Mysophagic Nightmare, My Mother, My Pizza Topping. How am I supposed to... The two of them lifted a large disc with holes punched into it, shimmied over, then lowered it on top of the glass chamber I was in. A clockwise spin and it was screwed on tightly. Shelley dusted her pinchers. "And that was step two. Congratulations, my friend. You came through it like a thrice-damned champ."
"Wait, what?"
"We're done.
You said you were going to put my hippocampus in a jar."
"And so we have." Hype Man held up a mirror from the bathroom to show me my hippocampus, but I couldn't see it with all my head in the way. "I meant my hippocampus and only my hippocampus."
"Oh,
we don't do that. What are you, crazy? That would kill you."
"You told me your technology was even better than the Migos."
"Well, it is.
How is this better?"
"Because we didn't glop out a wad of your brain and stick it in a jar, duh."
"This is largely the opposite of what I wanted, so could you just let me out now?"
"Why don't you just cool it down a bit there, Mr. No Thanks? I feel like you're itching to sock me in the puss."
What? "Look, I swear I'm not about puss socking or whatever. It's just that when you do it like this, it isn't insidious alien super science anymore. It's just kidnapping." I was such a sucker. I'd move into Cthulhu's goatee if I hadn't already signed the lease on this jar.
"Wait a minute. Have you got any alien friends who can remove my hippocampus?"
They conferred.
"You're in luck. Hype here thinks the great race of Yith are in town. They do, like, mind transfers through time and space and that kind of crap."
That could work. You think they can transfer my mind into a computer server? You got me, pal. We'll hunt them down and see if they're even interested. Ah, all right. In the meantime, could you please let me out of this jar? Sure, but what's wrong with the jar? Do you know how much jelly you have to buy from those warehouse clubs to get a jar this big? I waved my arms around, indicating the volume in the jar. This much? Who even eats this much jelly? Oh, you should see the size of our toast! Hype Man said. 5. We go for ice cream. They found out where the Yithians were. I calmed down. But then they couldn't get the lid off the jar. I got worked up again. Don't you have one of those grippy jar-opening things? I asked. Well, yeah, back on Pluto, but we didn't think we'd be having to open up any jars here.
Hold up, Hype Man said.
The Great Race of Yith are going to beam your damn fears right out of your head anyways. We don't need to open the jar. All we've got to do is go down and meet them. So they can transfer minds through time and space, but can't get to me up here. I'm just telling you what they said. Well, I've got a bad feeling about this. As you should, Shelley said, waggling her antenna like someone was blow-drying a chia pet. Because we don't have a hand truck. Wrap your arms around your head. You're gonna feel a slight, I believe as the French would say, discomfort. We're going for ice cream. Wait, what? With a synchronized shove, they knocked my jar on its side, rolled me into the service elevator, then out of the building and down the street. Definitely the most humiliating thing I'd ever done, and I once ate someone else's earwax to get a cotton swab sponsorship. I couldn't get out of this body fast enough. Shelley, I shouted over the ever-present rattle of glass on concrete. Please tell me we're not going to the ice cream request of Unknown Kadoff. Okay, we're not going there. No, but mean it. The owner doesn't want to talk to me. Tell the Yithians we'll meet somewhere else. Too late. We're here. My face smeared across my otherwise clear jail cell when it spun 90 degrees through a door. A tinkly bell announced our arrival. Whoa, said Shelley as soon as we came to a halt. Where'd you guys get that?
Ooh, that's hot,
said Hype Man. My body stopped spinning, and when my eyes caught up, there was Madeline behind the counter inside a giant glass ice cream sundae dish.
You like?
Asked a Yithian as it served banana splits to a family at the bar.
Oh, hell yeah,
said Hype Man. I saw Madeline perk up from inside her dish. Welcome to the ice cream request of Unknown Kadoff, where your ice cream request is our dream quest. Man, that's a mouthful. You gotta say that every time? Asked Shelley.
She does, said Yithian too,
who was stationed at the register.
This is like the 7th time we've heard it in the last 20 minutes.
Jesus. Hey, could you help us tip this jar back on the flat side? Shelley asked. Both Yithians wrapped their bloated, snaky arms about the jar, and I was happy to be back on my feet. The Yithians weren't half as frightening as the Wego. Yithian bodies even came with their own skirts. I extended a hand, hitting it on the glass. Ugh, thanks a lot, I said. No wonder they call you the Great Race of Yith. I meant it as an icebreaker, but there was an awkward silence. I'm sorry, did I say something wrong?
Yes. We're not the great race of Yith,
said Yithian One.
We come from Yith, too. Yeah, but, you know, someone develops the gift of language first, and they grow a little taller. Well, you get the picture. We're the, with a lame race of Yith. The great ones make us say that because they're... Well, because they suck.
They suck.
Oh, sorry. Let me guess, you don't do mind transfers, do you?
In a sense, we do, said Yithian too. We're more about empathy. We like to bring people together and let them experience what it's like to walk in one another's shoes.
I asked, are we talking psychic communion of the amygdala? Because where I want to end up doesn't have a fleshy brain. Yithian One said,
No, what we do is we take off the one being's pair of shoes and we switch them with the others. That's what we really do.
Are you fucking with me?
No, no, that's what we actually do.
Then why are you all laughing?
It's hissing. We're hissing.
That's not hissing.
It's hissing. We're hissing around here. It's fabulous, really. Much better than it sounds,
said Ithian too. Finally, Shelley indicated to Madeline and me and said, "Hey, do these two. You can cut the tension with a sacrificial knife in here."
"To do that," Ithian too said, "would be delightful, if of course all parties are consenting."
Oh, I'm ready. If it meant getting this jar open, I was all for it. "I hope your shoes don't stink, Jad," Madeline said. Ithian one waved its limbs hypnotically.
"Ah, okay, here we go. Kablammy!"
And suddenly, I was wearing a pair of Converse high tops, three sizes too small, and I was still in the jar. I looked over at Madeline in her open-top crystal cage. Her feet were swimming in my Vans black-and-white checkerboards. For some reason, I started to understand Madeline better than I'd ever understood anyone, including myself. The devastation of losing her little brother to a car accident just weeks ago. How crazy busy she was trying to hold her business together. Why she normally avoided melting cheese because she knew she couldn't control herself around it. Her disappointment in me. "Why in the hell do you want to leave your body so badly?" she asked me. "Look at me. I'm in my 20s and my hairline's already receding. I'm genetically predisposed to a couple of things that will probably take me out of the game before I see 60. And that's if I'm lucky. People see me and they get a look on their face. They jump to conclusions. I've been insulted, pushed, hit with bottles. There's no reason to think some lunatic out there wouldn't kill me if they had the opportunity. This body has been nothing but trouble, and it's only going to get worse." "So you're trying to destroy yourself before the world can? That's your plan?" Madeline asked. "Well, good for you, Jad. Your haters are going to be thrilled that you're saving them the trouble. Do you care about what they're depriving you of? You don't get to go out with me again, for one. And I'm a lot of fun if my date's not trying to off himself. You also don't get any ice cream, ever. You don't get to hug anyone anymore. You don't get to... well, you don't get to share a porch swing-stroking Abdul Al-Hazred's brain jar on a lazy Sharonian evening while the two of you sing Makin' Whoopee," Shelley said with a quivering voice. "That's right, you don't," Madeline said. "Look at yourself." And I could look at myself from Madeline's vantage point. There I was, pressed up against the inside of a jar on the other side of the counter while customers squeezed around me to place their orders. I looked kind of sad. Madeline asked, "Do you want to deprive him of what little spark of living we get in an ocean of oblivion pressing in on all sides?" "But they're all so terrible, Madeline," I said through her. "So many terrible people who want to do so many terrible things." "Look at him again," she said. "You stopped looking." "I am looking. Look at that guy alone over there, slumped over. Probably give anything for someone who cares to hold him for a while. Do you really want to hurt that guy, Jad?" Our throat felt full. I couldn't get the word out, so I shook her head. I thought I was wiping Madeline's eyes, but I was back in my own body, back in my own shoes, and a little red drone hovered just beyond the glass. "Drone Loke?" Just Jad now, said the drone, formerly known as Loke. "You orchestrated this whole thing, didn't you?" I said. "Is it that horrible being conscious online? Did I do wrong by you?"
No, not at all. It's actually pretty awesome, because I think so fast, and I only have to spend a tiny percentage of my time uploading content. But at this accelerated pace, I've had several lifetimes to miss being a human. I figured at least one aspect of me should get to enjoy it.
"Well, thank me very much," I said.
I'm welcome,
that other Jad said.
"Cool," said Shelley, clapping her pinchers. "Now that that's fixed, can we get some more maple walnut over here? The Migos say it's the cat's pajamas in Vermont. At least they did in 1927.
"That reminds me,"
Ithian too said, as it helped Madeline out of her Sunday dish.
Everyone, big sale on cat's pajamas at the Ulthar Target this Sunday. Be there or be bare.
Can we get a hammer or something to get me out of this frickin' jar already? I shouted. I'm ready to live now, and there's a wall of glass in the way. Hey, don't even think about smashing my jar, Shelley said. From an extra-dimensional pocket, she unfolded a circle of spongy rubber. Really? I asked. You honestly think I'd truck across the entire solar system without my grippy jar-opening thing? And then I was out. Madeline hugged me. Shelley and Hype Man surrounded us both with their chitinous embrace. You didn't notice the smell so much once you got used to it. And they were good people. Yithian 1 and Yithian 2 wrapped all four of us up in their freaky long distendable limbs. And even Drone Jad landed back into the grooves Drone Loke had worn into my shoulder over the years.
So, what does everybody, you know, feel like doing now?
Yithian 1 asked. How about, I said, thinking about everyone here. We put our non-leather shoes in that jar and pour some melted cheese over the whole thing, and Drone Jad can snap a pic. That sounds terrible, but we have to do it now, Madeline said.
If everybody says yes to that suggestion, I want us all to consider a long-term relationship together, said Yithian 2.
Oh, hell yeah,
said Hype Man. I was alive, and I had friends, two things I didn't expect when I woke up this morning. Death may last forever, but death doesn't have domain over always. With every chemical reaction, we, the living, spit in the face of oblivion. Eternity will always have a crack in it where we resided. The unforgiving universe may stretch on into time unimaginable, hoping to forget that broken place, but it can never repair it. We're here, now, causing trouble for the darkness. The six of us snuggled tightly, and for a little while longer, staved off the cold of the void in which all the world swam.
If you ever find yourself stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world to find you. If you ever find yourself lost in the dark and you can't see, I'll be the light.
All right, I'm here with Matthew Sanborn Smith, the author of that wonderful story, The Shallow One, we just listened to from Drabblecast episode 437 back in December of 2020, a story we commissioned from him for Lovecraft Month that year. Matthew, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you, Norm?
I am wonderful. Matthew's with the blog Beware the Hairy Mango, which I remember hearing those words in that order a long time now. Ever since Drabblecast's conception back in the day, I remember you were one of the guys that was writing really weird, weird stuff. So you've kind of always been in the periphery, but only until, I guess, the last couple of years have we had some stories by you on the podcast. And you've been really knocking them out of the park with us. I think you're like 5 for 5 now or something. I don't know if we've ever rejected a story of yours.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. It's great to sort of, bridge minds and have something in common, have a taste in common, you know?
Totally.
I'm very glad to do it.
We've done the City Tongue of yours, which was on a doubleheader, and that one's such a weird one, just tongues with, it is what its name is, you know? A tongue in a wall, yeah. And the Rubble People was one we did on our B-Sides episode, which is great and really tragic. And I'm trying to think of this one. There's one I'm forgetting, I believe.
Those two really short ones.
Oh, the chair.
Sometimes I'm a chair.
Yeah.
And Lives and Times, or Life and Times, I forget. I think it was Life and Times, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that chair story was just so heartbreaking and beautiful. It was great. You really excel at the short medium. How many stories do you have, like, in total?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I have, like, maybe a couple hundred stories that I have sent out, to editors to publish and whatnot. But if you include the stories that I do on the Mango, that's another 600 or 700 very short ones. So I'm very used to flash fiction.
Yeah. Has it always been that way with you? Have you been a flash guy since you started writing?
Yeah, pretty much, because I have a short attention span. I have ADD, so that's my wheelhouse. I have done some longer things. I've even written a novel that has not been published, but I like short fiction is my groove.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you. I'm like 100-word stories. I can't even handle short fiction. I'm like, just give me 100 words and travels. Yeah. So your stories often have like a very weird idea kind of at the core, like a tongue in a wall, like we're talking about. Is that kind of the genesis? Or what is your process like oftentimes? Do you have one?
It really depends. I don't know where that came from. It's been years since I actually wrote the thing, but I may have just envisioned a tongue in a wall. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'll just do wordplay and come up with a weird idea like that. Like I'm working on a mango now. I actually, the mango stories are now on my Patreon, patreon.com/MatthewSanbornSmith. And it's called Beware the Patronizing Mango over there, which you can still hear those stories for free, even though it's Patreon. Nice. But so I'm working on one right now. I was just like, okay, I need a weird sounding thing, and I'll play with words. And I thought of airplane, and then I thought of wereplane. So a woman gets bitten by an airplane and turns into an airplane at night herself.
Yeah, that's the gold I'm talking about right there. That's all of this time, so, wereplane was under our nose, and you found it out. You sniffed it finally.
So I just mess with words sometimes, and sometimes I just sort of mess with ideas. Like you know, if I'm you know, a guy puts on his shoes in a story, I'm thinking, well, shoes are boring. What else could he put on his feet? And maybe some big green globs of goo mm-hmm. that pick up dirt as he walks, and it's a sort of a cleaning product. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I don't like this. Let me try something else.
Definitely. Yeah. It reminds me a little of like what Frank Key, he's this author that I used to love. That's kind of.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So you're familiar with that absurdist kind of.
I am. But yeah, I used to love his stuff.
I just sometimes his ideas come from words, really weird sounding words. And they seem to be like kind of the engine of his ideas a lot of times. Just been curious about where ideas come from, because you just mentioned green globs of goo as shoes. That seems to be what gets lost in translation for people, where an idea comes from nothing, you know, the big bang that is the genesis of the green shoe.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, and I tell people this when we talk about ideas, is that we all have hundreds and hundreds of ideas each day, but they're so stupid that we just like blip over them and immediately forget them, because our normal mind, who's trying to get by in the world, is saying, that's dumb, I don't need that right now, get rid of it. So all I do is try to, you know, take those ideas in, you know, and say, I'll give you a home.
You're right, right? I mean, our senses are almost designed to keep information out, you know, as opposed, we think of them as things that like that bring information in, right? But a lot of times there's just so much data going on in the world, like especially quantum levels, you know, and dimensional levels, that our brains would explode with the information. And so what you're saying is, instead of like reaching out for ideas, it's more like filter less ideas and things away. Bring in more of chaos that's already naturally present in your stupid ideas of the day.
And you have to be open to all the stupid ideas to get some good ideas.
Some good stupid ideas.
Yes, exactly. Those are the top.
That's the adventure, right? That's going out to Antarctica is having the balls to like to bear your own bad ideas, you know, to search for the golden cup. It's so rare that you get like you know, that writing advice that seems new. That's new to me. I've never thought of it that way.
Well, good.
Yeah. You learned something here on the
LD Cast. I contributed something.
You did. You did. Thank you. And the shallow one is one that you contributed that I've really appreciated, that there was so much uncovered territory here as far as, you know, followers was something I never thought about, that parallel between social media and Lovecraft, you know, everyone wanting a following, and the detachment from the body, like you're talking about there, right? The brains being separated in the canisters. And I was like, oh my God, that's great. That's good stuff.
I make these connections by, again, just, I let my mind wander as I'm doing these things, you know, and I say, oh wait, there's something. And so I go down all these little avenues and side streets, and I sometimes can glue it together.
Well, let's jump in. This is Drabblecast 437, the shallow one. We're going to listen together.
1. Pod people. I first met Madeline at the local drugstore, IBS, in the digestive aids aisle.
Such a romantic meet cute.
Yeah. I actually work part-time at a drugstore, and so I'm actually picturing my own store in my head as I say this.
Is it like a Rite Aid? Because that's the one I always think when I think drugstore.
No, it's a CVS.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That does change the setting a lot.
Yeah.
It's not urgent. I'm just trying to ease back on my attachment to my body, working on projecting my mind beyond the confines
that
of this
sounds normal.
Skull.
Yeah, right. Just say you've got diarrhea. It's a little bit clearer.
I rubbed my knuckles on the side of my head, emphasizing its damnability. Oh, sure. Yeah, I totally get that.
She this said, was interesting, though, because especially in light of the chat GPT and AI and all this stuff, that's a whole other area you kind of gone with is the detachment from the body and the obsession with getting away from the human aspects of us. This kid, whoever the social media guy is, just has not considered that the body and the skin is anything but abhorrent. You know, he's repulsed almost by
right.
Get it out there.
Right. And I think if he had lived in an earlier time, he wouldn't feel that.
Yeah, it's almost like the Lovecraftian mythos is arriving around us in a technological, trappings. And it's, it's
yeah.
Almost like they're here. They're just not nearly what we picked. They're not squamous and ichthyan. They're Silicon Valleyan.
Drone Loke. Her blank expression reminded me.
Drone Loke. So that's a take on Tone Loke.
That's what. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Rapper back in the day.
Yeah, I went down a Tone Loke rabbit hole after you told me that.
Oh, okay.
All sorts of little nuggets buried in here like that, right?
Yeah, and okay. I mentioned Drona Barrett because mm-hmm. Rona Barrett was a gossip columnist on TV back in the 70s.
...a couple inches and lifted her shirt a bit before posing with the bottle of full bore like a game show presenter.
Full bore.
None of this was helping me detach from my body. I showed her my phone with Drone Loke's pic of her before I posted it. She grabbed the phone and added, hashtag, she really softens my stool. Damn. Someone in real life finally understood me. I think
I love a woman who's able to be gross in front of a guy.
Yeah, just casually, right? Own it.
Deeper into the
anti-fungal aisle. It was an omen.
Fungal aisle? Is there a fungal aisle? I mean, that would be some real life experience.
There's an anti-fungal aisle.
Oh, okay. So a fungal aisle is a different take on that.
No, Madeline and Jad. Yeah, or we could do that. You want to go for lunch? I mean, like, the day after tomorrow or something? After the storm? She asked, shaking the Cenapod bottle. Yeah, I know a great...
I had to look around for a good sound effect with that one. You know, it's going to make
yeah,
a good...
Yeah, that was good.
Really?
Those Cenapod laxatives go through you like artillery,
they
man.
They do, yeah.
Virtual
quick and easy.
The real ones, several thousand to one. Why not? Madeline said. I mean, we're probably all going to be eaten by those aliens soon. Living and laughing till we're dying and crying, right? If I didn't think I'd eat it myself...
And, of
I'd
course,
carry
pod,
some of that
pod people isn't necessarily a Lovecraftian thing, but it feels similar.
Right, yeah. Also, it fits with your theme of coming from a pod. Like, it's whenever I'm sitting in my little cubicle here and figuring about social media and recording things, I feel like I'm in a pod, like a little isolated...
Yeah. Right.
That was no joke.
The confines of my skull is such a different way of looking at the brain, Oh, it's stuck in here in this black, dark jar of a skull.
Of Indiana, my tiny server farm, well, more of a server victory garden, really was collecting my posts and my comments, my photos and videos, and feeding them to a neural network, which was trying to become me as quickly as possible.
This is scary because, this is happening, I feel like,
Yeah, I think it is.
This is, yeah.
I know somebody is trying to do this right now.
If you just vanish off the face of the earth, I know how, it'll be somebody, you cross the line, They're like, oh, they're on to us, we gotta get rid of this Matthew Sanborn Smith, he's writing about our technology.
And that cross-species.
Well, you get the word out for me, will you?
Yeah, well. I will.
Some TV time and lifting me from six digits to seven. I earned every one of those eyeballs and ear balls by not running from them or screaming till my throat exploded. I mean, picture the unholy spawn of a lobster and a wasp and a head fuzzy with so many antennae it could see in radio.
Oh, I do.
I know, because they told me I looked like Bruno Mars. And the stench... No wonder
Bruno Mars. Did you have to think hard about which celebrities you're going to kind of...
I had to think a little bit, but yeah. I'm not that into pop music, so yeah. It was easy. I had a very few names to draw on.
He was good. He was good. That was a good pick.
Whoever they were.
You got these Migo over here. They're selfish, and they're all about their secrets, they told me. Or at least one of them did, whom I named Shelly. The other one quietly stayed back a step to Shelly's left, like a hype.
I like the idea of Lovecraftian aliens who are just kind of shat upon by the other Lovecraftian aliens.
I love it, yeah. And these guys would be, that's one of my favorite things with the Migo, too, is they're just, like, they're obsessed with knowledge, like they're the nerds of the whole mythos, you know? And they would get picked on by everybody. They'd be like, oh, the Migo, like everybody's so badass. And then you got these fungus that just want to, like, learn shit and carry brains around. And
whispering in the darkness. But us, if we
got whispering in the darkness. Some of us know what you did there.
In broad daylight, and even then we'll probably just
that's not a deep in joke, but I will tell deep in jokes that only one person will get just for the joy of it.
Yeah, oh, it's great, the little Easter eggs. The hype man. Suddenly
excited. Yes, I love your air horn.
There was a couple little, I think I emailed you in the story once. I was like, can I do this? Can I add this? Was it for Yig or something? There was just
You did some ad libs with the Yith, I think.
Yeah, just because, you know, the spirit of your writing is like, it's almost like an animated cartoon. Like, I would watch this show on, like, Cartoon Network or something, Adult Swim, you know?
Absolutely.
Lovecraft and Friends.
Mycelium level. Think galactically. Act globally. About the only things we share with the Migo are our love for travel, reading, and canning.
Can it up!
Shouted the hype man.
Can it
Hell
up.
Yeah. If the Migo were worse, I wanted no part of them. I had made enough trouble overcoming my revulsion to talking fungi with pink exoskeletons, no matter how sincere they seemed.
You know what? It just dawned on me. That's a kind of a point one would bring up if they were in, like, a literature class, that he's trying to get out of his brain, and the Migo want his brain so badly, right? This is two different whole takes on it right there, you know? And
right.
Both of them are oblivious. But
let's be clear. This is the Wego. These are, like, lesser Migo.
True. Oh, that's, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Wego.
They're not quite as good.
Candy wafers called the Necronomicon. But that wasn't the most controversial book there, even if those things are like eating chalk. To the left of it, one of the spines clearly reads,
yes,
to preserve
Necco wafers.
Man.
Uh-huh. I got triggered by
that. Does that mean the Wego are trying to save us from our own destruction, or women? Some people claimed it wasn't so bad because a canning book wasn't technically a cookbook, but cooking was involved, making it equally as uncomfortable for the human participants. I didn't really think the aliens were going to eat us.
It's funny that, though, the Wego would be into canning. You know, what if that was... It's not about the brains, it's about the process, really. That's what
right.
that turns them on, is the canning process. For, oh, it's just brains, you know?
And rather than pickles this time.
Right, they probably got tons of pickle planets.
End of a spastic colon. Are you ever not online? She asked. God, I hope not, I said, posting a poll on whether I should finish up the meal with the chocolate-frosted faux tuna or the candied fake squirrel tails. I understand you've got a business to run, but a little bit of privacy is good sometimes.
I've actually gotten
too,
off social media in the last few months. Elon Musk helped me a lot.
Oh, right, yeah. You know what? I mean, just it's he could be, I guess, this main character almost. You know, it's interesting thinking about who that.
In a way, yeah.
He's everyone has their own opinion about what Elon Musk should be doing with his billions of dollars. You know, it's funny that he's for me, it's like Twitter's not what I would be spending my time and energy on if I had this vision of like Mars and stuff. You know, it's weird that this.
Right.
I forget that Twitter exists, so it's just this whole other area.
But not quite getting there. Then she said, "I think I'm gonna go now." I couldn't argue. I went to my default mode, which meant plugging myself when I really wanted to burst into tears.
There is a sense of like existential dread that of the social media, I guess, is emblematic in this guy, the social media attitude of like the apology videos. And you know, there's got to be
right.
real like underneath it all. I feel like there's like anxiety, right? There's got to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And the physical like meetup always mm-hmm. goes much worse than anything online.
Oh, yeah. I've always wanted to go to one just to see how bad they could get, you know?
Yeah.
To question their methods when they had me climb into a portable glass chamber in their hotel suite. Relax, sweet lobes. This is just a step one, Shelly
Sweet
said.
Lobes.
Okay. Here, something to read during the procedure. Hope you like horror. The title was Mysophagic Nightmare, My Mother, My Pizza Topping. How am I supposed
I could smell a Matthew Sanborn Smith joke from a mile away. That, it smells like that.
Glass chamber I was in. A clockwise spin and it was screwed on tightly. Shelley does.
It's funny that how quick people would be to jump into like something like this. You know, it's just it's
yeah, I know.
Completing that final step that we're missing, which is just get me in the chair, hook my brain into the thing, and send me out there.
And so we have. Hype Man held up a mirror from the bathroom to show me my hippocampus, but I couldn't see it with all my head in the way. I meant my hippocampus and
all my head in the way.
Oh. Not for long, buddy.
We don't do that. What are you, crazy? That would kill you. You told me your technology was even better than the Migos. Well, it is. How is this better? Because we didn't glop out a wad of your brain and stick it in a jar, duh. This is largely the opposite of what I wanted, so could you just let me out now? Why don't you just cool it down?
I prefer the Wego technology to the Migo technology.
The true horror of the Migo is the loneliness, I guess, of being a brain in a jar for an undisclosed eternity, you know? And it's just being lonely, right? That's, I guess, it goes against this fundamental fear of being alone that humans have and isolated. But it's so odd that, like, the future of thinking seems to be going in that singular direction.
Yeah. What's interesting is we are brains in bone jars.
Yeah.
We're just hooked up to pretty decent sensory system,
it's
so
true.
It's okay.
We are brains in bone jars, yeah.
In the meantime, could you please let me out of this jar? Sure, but what's wrong with the jar? Do you know how much jelly you have to buy from those warehouse clubs to get a jar this big? I waved my arms around, indicating the volume in the jar. This much? Who even eats this much jelly? Oh, you should see the size of our toast.
Higher horns. I need a hype man. That's one thing Drabblecast has always missed, is a hype man.
We go for ice cream.
The mango could use a hype man. We could be each other's hype men.
Just absolutely.
Like sharing promos and just hyping.
Get the lid off the jar. I got worked up again.
I have to buy an air horn.
Don't you have one of those grippy jar opening things? I asked.
What is a grippy jar? Is that a thing? I need to get one of these if they
exist.
You know,
yeah. It's like a circle of rubber that goes over the jar, and it gives your hand some grip on the jar.
Ah, yeah, I've never seen that
You've
before.
Never seen one of those,
No,
huh?
No, I've just never opened jars that, like, my hands...
I figured
my hand was the grubby jar-opening thing. That was, you know...
We thought we were in a paperless society, but we're in a grippy-less society.
Bad feeling about this. As you should, Shelley said, waggling her antenna like someone was blow-drying a chia pet. Because we don't have a hand.
I smell Matthew Sanborn Smith.
You're going to feel a slight, I believe as the French would say, discomfort. We're going for ice cream. Wait, what? With a synchronized shove, they knocked my jar on its side, rolled me into the service elevator, then out of the building and down the street. Definitely the most humiliating thing I'd ever done, and I once ate someone else's earwax to get a cotton swab sponsorship. Yeah. I couldn't get out of the spot.
That's like the one fluid from a human. I mean, there's a lot that I wouldn't went to, but I draw the line. At earwax, I just couldn't do it, man. It's the grossest.
Yeah. I saw a guy on YouTube eat a cactus for views.
It's
like,
God.
Come on, guy. Let's have some common sense.
Yeah, like with the pins, right? Because I feel you could eat if you pick those off.
Yes.
Oh, God.
But he didn't.
No wonder they call you the great race of Yith.
Oh.
I meant it as an icebreaker, but there was an awkward silence. I'm sorry, did I say something wrong?
Yes, we're not the great race of Yith, said Yithian One. We come from Yith, too, yeah, but, you know, someone...
See, you're expanding on the mythos here in a way that I think is acceptable. This is what Lovecraft opened up, I think, when he said, you know, everybody can just do my stuff and do derivative stuff with it.
I was imagining Yithian One with a Bob Newhart voice.
That's true.
Like, a lot of stammering.
Yeah.
And maybe Yithian Two is more like Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
Together and let them experience what it's like to walk in one another's shoes.
I put, like, some effects on that to make... I couldn't quite get enough mucus in my voice to get a Yithian.
Doesn't have a fleshy.
You did well. I didn't even realize that was an effect.
It's a little peppered in there.
No, what we do is we take off the one being's pair of shoes and we switch them with the others. That's what we really do.
Are you fucking with me?
Yeah,
that's what we actually do.
Then why are you all laughing?
It's hissing. We're hissing.
That's not hissing.
It's hissing.
It's hissing.
We're hissing around here. It's fabulous, really.
Yeah, I usually wouldn't ad-lib quite that much, but you just had so much rolling already on your own there that it kind of just fun to do.
That was great, man. I loved it.
Yethians kind of feel snaky to me, you know? Is it Yig? Is that the actual snake? I don't know. My Lovecraft mythos
stuff. I can't remember, but it sounds right.
Yeah, I think Yithians are kind of like doodly bug little dudes, but they've kind of had a serpentine thing in my head for a while.
I think they have sort of serpentine limbs, if I remember correctly.
Right, yeah.
Okay, here we go. Kablammy!
This is like that moment at the end of Christmas movies that star Tim Allen, you know, when like Santa Claus is really coming to real and the magic is happening.
And I was still in a jar. I looked over at Madeline in her open-top crystal cage. Her feet were swimming in my Vans black-and-white checkerboards. For some reason, I started to understand Madeline better than I'd ever understood anyone, including myself. The devastation of losing her little brother to a car accident just weeks ago. How crazy busy she was trying to hold...
I forgot about that. Like, I guess that's that's short stories for you right there, but there was a little bit of... She just lost her brother in a car accident. Doing pretty good. Her
disappointment. Right, right. And a story this short, you've got to kind of squeeze in as much character as you can in as little space as you can.
Look at me. I'm in my 20s and my hairline's already receding. I'm genetically predisposed to a couple of things that will probably take me out of the game before I see 60. And that's if I'm lucky. People see me and they get a look on their face. They jump to conclusions.
This goes back to the Arab thing. There's no
reason. Oh, you know, that's interesting. That's cool to think about that this time around. I missed that the first time. This body has been
nothing but trouble. Yeah, because as you remember, he sees the books in Arabic, although they're not necessarily...
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's neat.
Yeah.
I had not thought... Yeah, that's it really casts this kind of in a different light. It's like, that's a serious note, you know? And what I was drawing from it is my own personal... You know, sometimes as I age, I think about these kinds of things, too. And I missed that whole Arabic thing. Because it does tie into, like, the Aramaic of the books and stuff. It's kind of clever that you would do that, because it is often... It is always written in Aramaic. In Arabic.
Yeah. ...stroking Abdul
Al-Hazred's brain jar on a lazy Sharonian evening while the two of you sing Making Whoopee... Shelley said with a quivering voice. That's right, you don't, Madeline said.
Making Whoopee because the Whisper in Darkness came out around 1929, I think.
Okay.
There I was.
I wonder if Lovecraft ever said Making Whoopee, like if those were words that ever came out of his mouth, like uttered.
Making Whoopee.
I hope so.
They're all so terrible, Madeline.
And like the two times that he probably ever made Whoopee.
So many terrible people who wanted to do so many terrible things.
I tried to cast this in an emotional, like, piano music thing, because oftentimes in your stories, as silly as they get, like, there's, like, this empathy that kind of runs throughout it. Like, the chair story that we were talking about that was a Drabblecast doubleheader that, like, always brings me to, like, light tears after laughing, and I appreciate that because it's a hard, like, emotional balance to have.
It kind of is, but, like, in a lot of people's lives, it's not, because, like, I've dealt with depression in the past, and... you're miserable inside, and yet you're laughing the whole way just to sort of get through it, you know? So they feel similar to me.
Huh. Yeah, a lot of stand-up comedy probably would relate to that, too, right? I think there is a lot of depression field to laughing at yourself.
So there's sadness and laughter simultaneously.
Cool, said Shelley, clapping her pinchers. Now that that's fixed, can we get some more maple walnut over here?
Shelley's like the lobster, manic pixie lobster girl.
They did in 1927. That reminds me, Yithian too said, as it helped Madeline out of her Sunday dish. Everyone, big sale on cat's pajamas at the Ulthar Target this Sunday. Be there or be bare. Can we get a hammer or something to get me out of this frickin' jar already? I shouted. From an extra-dimensional pocket, she unfolded a circle of spongy rubber. Really? I asked. You honestly think I'd truck across the entire solar system without my grippy jar-opening thing?
See, so it is a thing. Are you like we really have the? Because it's being presented here as this extra. She had to go to another dimension to get it. So
we don't have them in that size here on Earth.
Oh, okay.
That's a big jar.
Oh, right. Okay, that's the difference. We don't have them that big. She had to go get a bigger one. Okay, because to me, like I'm like hearing this and thinking like since I haven't seen these jar opening things, you know, I don't even. I'm so foreign to that. I have to see a basic one before I can get it.
It looks like a textured rubber piece of bologna.
Yithian 1 asked.
How about, I said, thinking about everyone here, we put our non-leather shoes in that jar and pour some melted cheese over the whole thing, and Drone Jad can snap a pic. That sounds terrible, but we have to do it now, Madeline said.
If that was just nonsense to bring everybody together.
Putting your shoes in a circle and just dancing, you know, like girls' night out with cheese. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, this has like the feel of a pilot of a great show, like something that I would totally pitch to like Adult Swim or something.
Yeah.
Death of course, may last forever, we had to but
throw in the Bruno Mars song.
Over always.
Yeah. That was a fantastic pick. I loved it.
The living. It was a surprise because like this little ukulele guitar kind of bounced. This has got the perfect feel for an outro to this story, I feel like.
It does. It works with the very end of it.
You got to have that the mood, obviously. Like here's what I've learned, kind of like the exposition piece, and it has that setting to it, like with the narrator. And it's great last line.
And for a little while longer, staved off the cold of the void, in which all the world swam.
Yeah, I thought it was that made me tear up when I was reading it. Even the first time was just this again flipping the inside out of the Lovecraftian dread of the fact that we aren't enveloped into whatever abysmal thing that is the scariest stuff that we could think of as Lovecraft. That should be enough to be celebratory and happy. You know, it's a glass half full kind of perspective, but
we're so used to seeing it half empty.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like it is. It's like 99.9% full. You know, of cosmic doom.
Yeah.
But it's like 0.0001% not, and that's pretty like unfathomably cool. Like that's the that's what's like high five, you know, that we're here still despite that. Despite the inevitable doom. I sometimes think that's amazing that we're still here when any like the sun could be a little solar flare, something could happen, a comet could come by and pull something out of orbit, you know, any number of things could happen that would just wipe things out. That doesn't even involve like tentacled monstrosities from other dimensions that Lovecraft writes. Just the universe we're in.
It's all miraculous. I mean, even each one of us is miraculous because, like, my dad fought in World War II in the South Pacific, and at one point he took a bayonet to the groin.